What are the functions of a legislative body? Four of them. Those are the broad, you know, you can make up more lists if you want. Articulating ideas, representation. Is there an inherent conflict built into the general representation and the special representation feature? Oh, yeah. Making law, and then, of course, I think probably among the most important functions of the legislature is budgeting and taxation, figuring out what you're going to pay, what you're going to use, and what you're going to pay for. Now, the following is a personal opinion identified as such. These people who say, we don't need a whole lot of government. I say, you know, you want a place that has no government? Move to Somalia. Of course, there's no protection, no roads, no infrastructure, no hospitals, no schools. But, God, might be your libertarian dream. Now, the question is, how much of that do you need? We went from multi-member to single-member districts by court ruling. So the system of representation that the legislature currently uses is single-member districts. There are advantages and disadvantages to any representational system. What's the main disadvantage to multi-member districts? And that's why the court declared them unconstitutional back in the 1970s. Caroline? What's the main problem with multi-member districts? Do minorities have a chance of getting any representation? No. Now, I had a very interesting conversation many years ago with a representative who was, and I will not mention political party, but was Caucasian, upper middle income. And he was just absolutely endemic. We need to keep the multi-member system. The majority ought to be able to pick all the representatives. I said, all right, be careful what you wish for, because given Texas demographic patterns, before very long, your county is going to be majority-minority. And your county has X number, I'm not going to tell you which one, X number of representatives. Are you going to be happy if you have absolutely no say in the representation of your county? I could have hit him with an anvil, and it wouldn't have struck him quite as hard. No. I say, well, be careful what you wish for, because your county is on a roll to where it will be majority-minority by, and I use the term 2010, actually it got there sooner than that, but their county still has Caucasian, you know, his particular genre, because they have single-member districts. Now, what's the downside to single-member districts? Can they be easily gerrymandered? What's a gerrymander?
Arranging the district lines for.
Yeah, in the to aid or punish particular categories of people. Now, back in 1967, when I was in charge of redistricting for Harris County. Not because I was a legislator, but because, 1965, I'm sorry, because I was working for Senator Cole. Senator Cole was blind. I was hired primarily to do redistricting for Harris County, among other things. It's great fun. He set the ground rules. We wouldn't gerrymander. Now, that's not the case today. The current seats in the Texas legislature have been badly gerrymandered. So much so that the federal courts have stepped in and knocked down some of them. Anybody familiar with what happened in Florida earlier this year? The Florida legislature gerrymandered its districts exceedingly, and the federal court stepped in. In fact, actually it was a state court stepped in, not Florida, because the Florida Constitution requires the districts will be, and you're going to see the same thing when we talk about the Texas legislature, certain constitutional requirements. And they were so grossly gerrymandered that the court stepped in and has redone the districts for Florida. So the elections of 2016 are going to be real interesting in Florida. I know you don't watch those sorts of things, but I do. Now, when we talk about typologies of legislatures, there are citizen legislatures and professional legislatures. How does the author of the textbook classify Texas? As a hybrid. And of course, I put it up there. I mean, I probably shouldn't have. What makes the difference in Texas? The three characteristics you look for are salary, length of sessions, and level of staffing, right? Texas legislature has, we're only one of seven states that have biennial sessions, that is, sessions every other year. There is no other major urban state that uses biennial sessions. Everybody else uses annual sessions or some variation thereof. Everybody, all of the major states, we're right in there with South Dakota, North Dakota, Wyoming, all those major metropolitan states, right? But on the other hand, we have the longest, you with me? The Texas Constitution sets a limit on the length of sessions. Some states, most of the states that have, quote, professional legislatures, it's up to the legislature to decide how long. Hey, Kathy. It's up to the legislature to decide how long they're going to be in session. Let me ask a question. Is that good or bad?
Can be both.
Can be both, can it? They can be like Congress. Congress has no limit on the length of their sessions. They meet longer and do less than almost any legislative body in the country. The budget for 2017 was supposed to be passed by October the 1st. Oh, wait a minute. The budget for 2016 was supposed to have been passed by October the 1st, 2015. Has it been?
No.
No, they're under continuing resolution. They didn't actually have an adopted budget for all of 2015, and we're on a roll for 2016 the same way. Remember a movie, The Gang That Couldn't Shoot Straight? All right, moving on. Roles for delegates, roles to know and understand. Delegates, advocates, trustee, politico. Delegate represents the ideas of his district. An advocate represents the views of special publics. I'm not saying special interests, special publics. Trustees vote their own ideas, and most legislators combine them. The ones that are strictly one of the above don't tend to be very effective. Now, Texas has 31 single-member districts for the Senate. By the way, we have the smallest state Senate of any urban state. Even some states that is no bigger than Iowa have 39 senators. What's the advantages and disadvantages to having that size? Is it possible to really... Well, let's look at the advantages. The smaller the legislative body, the easier it is to get it to get something done. So that's an advantage. The disadvantage, and I'm not going to ask you this on a test, is that you have to represent more people. So state senate districts in Texas are huge compared to the senate districts in most other states. House has 150. The average house of the average state, there's no such thing, of course, we do this mathematically, is about 139 representatives. Texas, that's of the urban states, Texas has 150. We use plurality elections in both the House and the Senate. Does everybody remember what a plurality election is? What is, Mr. Rios? You nodded your head, yes.
That's not my name.
Huh?
That's not my name.
I'm sorry. I apologize to you. I'm not good with names, but I recognize faces.
All right.
Okay.
It's an election.
Back to where we're going. Plurality.
It's an election that's held every odd number of years.
No, you're thinking. How many votes do you have to get to win a plurality election?
51.
No, that's a majority election. In a plurality, you get the most votes. No matter how many candidates are running Who gets the most votes wins.
Right.
There are 10 candidates. The city of Houston is going to have a mayoral election on November the 3rd. All right?
Right.
Got 6 candidates running for mayor.
Okay.
Right now, Sylvester Turner looks like he's going to get about 21% of the vote. If they had a plurality system, he would be elected mayor with 21% of the vote. But does Houston use the plurality system? Nope, they use majority. And if you have a situation like that and a majority vote system, what happens next? You got a runoff election where the top two vote getters. The real contest in Houston right now is not for who's going to be number one, it's going to be who's number two. And who are two and three on the list right now? And the polls indicate there's a half a percentage point between them, so that's well within the margin of the error of the polls, and who knows? Adrian Garcia, who's currently resigned as sheriff of Harris County, and Bill King, who was the former mayor of Kima and then moved to Houston. So it's going to be interesting. And the other three are what we call the ARs. You know what that stands for? Also ran. Nobody will remember them 6 weeks from now. No term limits. Let's repeat that. Ms. King, what are the term limits for our officers in the Texas legislature or for statewide office in Texas?
There's no limits.
There's no limits. So does that mean you could run for 4, 5, 6 terms if you wanted to? Yes. In fact, with the legislature, the problem is not term limits, it's the other side of the coin. Keeping them in there long enough to where they know what they're doing. Por qué? Why did it used to have tremendous turnover? 2 sessions at most, 3. Except the rural legislators tended to stay on, and the legislature was dominated by the rural areas because they were the ones that stayed on forever. The urban legislators didn't. I mean, a Harris County legislator who had served more than 3 terms was like hen's teeth. And then they passed what bill, which really encourages members to stay at least 4 terms? House members to stay 4 terms.
Is it the retirement
plan? The retirement plan. If you stay at least 8 years, you get a really sweet retirement package. And if you go up to 12 years, it's even a sweeter retirement package. But if you drop out at 6, too bad, so sad. You get nada. Everybody with us? Now, we said we'd talk about the constitutional requirements for districts. They must be contiguous. What does contiguous mean? That's one of those words you don't run across every day. Can I pick on you?
I mean,
you know what contiguous means?
No, I don't.
I'll bet you both of us will know in about 2 minutes.
I bet you're right.
It means you can't have one here, one part of it here, and one part of it here. They have to be connected. Now, contiguous wouldn't be helpful if it wasn't for the second and third point. You got to respect county boundaries as much as possible. You can't carve up a county like a turkey, unless there's enough people there to make it worthwhile. And then thirdly, the districts have to be reasonably compact. So you couldn't put this one, part of it here, and this part here, and connect them with a highway. There's a fascinating case, a Supreme Court case, of a state, and right now I don't remember exactly which state it was, that had created a district that looked something like this. And what connected the 3 pieces of this was a highway. Literally. They went down the right-of-way on either side of the railroad, or either side of the highway, to connect these three chunks of the district. And the Supreme Court said, actually, it was the state Supreme Court, not the federal Supreme Court, of that state said, that does not meet the contiguous compact requirement. Not compact. It's contiguous, but it's not compact. We had a few in Texas that almost resembled that, but they got struck down. Single-member districts only. We've already covered that. Some issues, malapportionment. Prior to 1964, urban counties were restricted to no more than one representative per 100,000 people. You had to, and one state senator regardless of the population. The federal court struck that down in the case of Baker versus Carr, which came along, actually for Texas it was Kilgarland versus Martin, came along in spring of 1964. I remember it well. I was teaching at Sam Houston State at the time. And as soon as that decision came down, Senator Cole's office called me and Senator said, Senator Cole, want you to come back and work in the legislature in 1965, spring of 1965, to help do redistricting. And so that kind of began my life in crime on that. Gerrymandering. There's no question that the districts in were very heavily gerrymandered. In 2011 to maximize Republican control of the House. In fact, so much so that the Texas Supreme Court struck down a part of it and the federal courts struck down another part of it. And what happens when the redistricting done by the legislature is declared unconstitutional, illegal, immoral, or fattening? There's a special board called into existence called the Legislative Redistricting Board. And I'm not going to ask you to memorize the membership on it, but it consists of Lieutenant Governor, the Speaker, the Comptroller of Public Accounts, the Commissioner of the General Land Office, and the Attorney General. You don't need to know that. And their job is to redraw the districts. We've not had a single redistricting since 1970, which has not been challenged or declared unconstitutional. And the redistricting board had to do parts or all of it over again. It's going to get interesting. But you got to be careful when you do that. It's, we've set a real bad pattern in Texas about gerrymandering. And if you don't carry anything out of this course but my following statement, I'll be at least happy. My grandmother used to say, be careful what you wish for, you may get it. We set up a pattern for gerrymandering, for drawing districts to favor one group over another. Given the current demographic and social trends in Texas, it's doubtful that 2011 legislature, 2021 legislature, will necessarily be majority-minority, but it could be. Just as the Republican majority in the House in 2011 really did a number on the Democrats. In Michigan, the Democrats were in control of the Michigan legislature, and they just dang near, and this was true in California, just dang near redistricted the Republicans, or gerrymandered the Republicans out of existence. Now, there's two ways to gerrymander. You don't need these for a test, but I'm going to tell you. One way is you pack the minority into a district where it's 90% of that particular political persuasion. Why is that? What does that cause gerrymandering?
Because they only have a few districts.
It minimizes how many districts they can have an impact on. The other way is you split the districts into small little chunks. Spread the population into small little chunks and parcel it out over a number of different districts, minimizing the impact of the. So, do you remember the well, I don't remember exactly which nursery rhyme it was. Too much or too little? Where do you strike the balance? That's where things get interesting when you're doing redistricting. You don't want to create, you do not want to minimize minority representation by packing, but on the other side of the coin, you don't want to split it up so much that it has no real impact. And there's got to be a sweet spot somewhere in there that's legitimate. And that's hard to find. The routine stuff. We have a bicameral legislature. There are 49 legislatures that are bicameral and one that's unicameral. I won't ask you to remember which state that is, but in case you're interested, it's Nebraska. And they did away with their House in the 1936 because they were so financially strapped they couldn't afford to have both chambers. Interestingly enough, though, when the Constitution was written, about half the states used bicameral and about half the states used unicameral. But they sort of followed the pattern of the United States Congress and went bicameral. Limited versus unlimited sessions. Texas legislature uses limited sessions, 140 days for the regular session, 30 days for a special, but no limits on how many specials. Technically, really, there's no limit, but the reality is no governor in his right mind is going to call more special sessions than the legislature will tolerate. Now, this is a trick question. I warn you. Okay? How long does the legislature have to meet when the legislature is called into special session by the governor? Maximum is 30 days. The record for Texas is 2 hours. Governor called them into special session. They didn't want to be there. They met simply long enough to convene and adjourn. Sine die, which means without day. So they let them all get home and called them back into special session. So they had to come all the way back to Austin and said, you can keep this up as long as you want to, as long as you really like that road between Austin and your hometown. Now get your rears in gear. We have annual sessions or biennial sessions? Biennial. There are only 7 states with biennial sessions, and Texas is the only urban state with biennial sessions. Citizen versus professional, we've already dealt with that. We really have a hybrid. Partisan versus nonpartisan. Technically, the Texas legislature is still a nonpartisan legislature. Technically. Now, the House of Representatives, does everybody know about Joe Strauss? Yes, no. Speaker of the House. Strauss was elected with very strong bipartisan support. There was a second candidate that ran against Joe Strauss, a Tea Party Republican, who got a grand total of 3 votes. He thought he had 30, but once they started counting noses, they decided that, you know, what's the first rule you want to follow if you're a House member? Thou shalt not piss off the Speaker. Por qué? That leads us to the question, what are the powers of the presiding officers? Right? The presiding officers of the Texas legislature are among the most powerful presiding officers of any state legislature. End of sentence. Fair enough? We'll come to that in a minute. There are several kinds of committees. The 3 kinds that I want you to be familiar with are standing, special, and statutory. Now, fascinatingly enough, the authors of the textbook and I, if you go back and look at the 3rd edition of this textbook, he's got a whole bunch more different kinds of committees listed. And I called up the person who was the chairman, who is the person who does the legislative section, and said, why don't you go read the rules of the House and the Senate? There are only 3 kinds of committees spelled out in the rules of the House and the Senate. There are standing committees and special committees. And the statutory committees, which are established by law for the Legislative Budget Board, the Audit Committee, and the Council. So what kind of a committee is a conference committee? Is it a special or a standing committee?
It's a special.
It's special. Is it joint, or does it have members from only one chamber?
Joint.
It's joint. So they had talked about joint committees. Joint committee is not a special kind of committee. It's just a kind of standing or a kind of special. Does that make sense to you? This is a whole lot more simple than what they had. They had, I think, six different kinds of committees listed. Only have three. Standing, special, and joint. Standing, special, and statutory. But you can have joint, which means members from both chambers. Interim. What's an interim committee? Can you have an interim standing committee? You don't need an interim standing committee. A standing committee exists for the entire legislative session, right? Entire term of the legislature. And can standing committees conduct investigations? Yes. Can they conduct studies? Yes. Can they hold hearings? Yes. But what if we need a committee to study something that's not really fitting within one standing committee? Can we create an interim committee? What's an interim? Period between the sessions. We can create an interim committee. Could you have an interim joint committee? Yeah. If you pass a concurrent resolution authorizing a joint committee, you can do it. But if you have a Senate resolution creating an interim committee, it will have Senate members only. If you have a House resolution committing interim committee, it would have House members only. Is it making sense? Really? Or are you just being sweet?
No, it's sweet.
Good. We're going to spend a lot more time with these three when we get to the budgeting process, these two in particular. Council does the research. It handles the website. It checks the language of bills. Before the Legislative Committee, Legislative Council took over responsibility for checking the language of bills. It's been weeks going back and cleaning up mistakes that had been previously done. And now they check it. They do research for you. But in addition, we have the House Research Committee and the Senate Committee, which also can do the House Study Committee and the Senate Research Committee. So what do you get compensation? $7,200 a year, per diem expenses, daily expense allowance, travel, and retirement. What is unique? By the way, there's a typo here. They increased the salary of district judges to $150,000 a year, and I didn't catch it. Bad dog. Is that the sort of thing that I would nail you to the cross on for a test? Heavens, no. It changes. What are the four kinds of legislative instruments? House bills, Senate bills. Now, you understand SB refers to Senate bill.
Mm-hmm. And the House bill.
Okay. One of the standing jokes in the Texas Senate was, which SB introduced this SB? I'm sorry, I probably shouldn't say that, but it's one of those standing jokes in the in the Senate. HJR, SJR can be used for one thing only. Constitutional amendment. Trick question for you. Can the governor veto a joint resolution?
No.
No, you're right. See, it goes directly to the public. These are all the result of joint resolutions. The only thing you can use for them is to publish a constitutional, to propose a constitutional amendment. Has to be approved by a majority of the people. Doesn't go to the governor. He's out of the loop. End of sentence. And then, what is the sound of one hand clapping? An HR or an SR? Can't make anything that really applies. It's a definitive rule because it takes both houses to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But the House is not going to let the Senate help it with its rules, and the Senate's not going to let the House help it with its rules. So an SR would be the only thing you could pass a put the rules for the House or the Senate, SR or HR for the House of Rules of the Senate. And it's an expression, bad dog. We love you. Would you like to guess what 95% of all HRs or SRs do? They're congratulatory or memorial resolutions. In a standard week, as a legislative aide, I would prepare anywhere from 30 to 50 congratulatory or memorial resolutions. But, lest you think that took a lot of time, all I had to do was write the name and date in.
Oh, cool.
Standard stock language, you know. All right, I'm going to diverge from my normal talking here for just a second. I only know of one time that a proposed memorial resolution was defeated on the floor. Somebody proposed a memorial resolution for a guy that nobody liked. End of sentence. And these are normally, so-and-so has proposed such-and-such, is there objection? Unanimous consent. Somebody said, no. Everybody turned around, what? No. I think this ought to be studied by committee. Okay, we'll refer it to committee. You think it ever came out of committee? Nah. Nobody's going to waste time with that. Did I tell you the story about, yes, I know I did, the legislator from McLennan County who proposed a congratulatory resolution for the Boston Strangler? Now, I tell that story, I try to tell it every semester, for a very good reason. If we had the time in this course, this were full semester on the legislature, I would talk about the informal rules of the House and the informal rules of the Senate. Think I know where you have any idea where I'm taking you on this? There are certain expectations about the way members are going to behave with each other. And when you violate those, guess what happens? They can make life very difficult for you. Let me give you an example in Congress that occurred. It's the only time that I know of, and the only time any of the congressional scholars know of. Ted Cruz made one of those motions for unanimous consent on the floor of the Senate about a month ago. Everybody know who Ted Cruz is? Senator from Texas. Normally, those are passed unanimous consent, no problem. Guess what? A majority of House of Senate members, both Democrat and Republican, objected. Unheard of. Well, now it's not unheard of. There are two groups of people that don't like Ted Cruz in the U.S. Senate right now, the Democrats and the Republicans. And the Republicans outnumber the Democrats by far, not only in terms of the total number, but in terms of their dislike for Ted Cruz. Why? Because he doesn't observe the rules of comity. You know what comity means? This is the way you do, this is the way you're expected to behave. This is the way you're expected to treat other members. And that was a pretty stinging rebuke. Duties of the legislature, legislate, propose amendments, very rarely. In fact, it has never been used, but if the governor-elect dies between the time of his election and the time of being sworn in, the governor would be picked by the legislature. Directory and supervisory by resolution, and more recently formalized into the LBB, the Legislative Budget Board, to investigate and then impeach and remove executive and judicial officials. So what are the non-constitutional duties? Constituency services, oversight, research. I'm just going to mention them. We talked about them a little bit. What percentage of your time do you think these types of duties take in the course of 24 months? If you really want to be an expert on, say, the Texas educational system, because you're chairman of the House Higher Education Committee, how much time is it going to take you to research and really know everything there is to know about it. Beaucoup. That's a little old French word for a whole lot. One of the concerns that everybody that's working with the legislature has is that much of the institutional memory of the legislature is evaporating. A lot of the chairs of House and Senate committees have announced, I'm out of here. Part of it is they reached their 12 years. We don't have term limits, but that 12-year, once you get 12 years in the retirement system, you can retire, is a damn good incentive if you're beating your head against the wall and getting nowhere. So the chair of the House Education Committee, the House Higher Education Committee, the Senate Finance, the Senate Education Committee, the Senate Finance Committee, the House Ways and Means Committee, and the House Appropriations Committee are all going to be new in the next session. It's going to be fun. You probably know as much about how the state of Texas is budgeted as some of those members that are going to be on the committee, and that's scary. House and Senate. House elects its speaker by a majority of the members. Because the Texas legislature works on a basically nonpartisan basis, it is a majority of the members, not a majority of the majority party. Not majority party. I'm jumping over to the federal government area for just a second. Right now, there is no Republican who can get a majority of the Republican, or 218 Republicans, to be elected Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives when Boehner vacates the office. And all of the people who were thinking about doing it have looked at that and said, life is too short. What is floating around is something that hasn't happened since the early 1800s. And that is to have a consensus speaker who's elected by a majority of Republicans and a majority of Democrats simultaneously. Is there anything in the rules of the United States House of Representatives that says it only has to be the Republicans or only has to be the Democrats who elect the speaker? No, the Constitution just says the House shall elect its speaker by a majority vote. So watch that space for coming attractions. This could get interesting. And several names are being floated as potential speakers. Now, the speaker is very, very powerful. We'll talk about what the powers of the presiding officers are in just a second. He gets to appoint all of the officers of the House. The House and the Senate. Come on, finish the mantra.
Do things differently.
Lieutenant Governor is elected by the voters. All of his powers and responsibilities are assigned by the rules of the Senate. There is no other Lieutenant Governor in the United States of any other state that has as much power as the Lieutenant Governor of Texas. End of sentence. But did I tell you about the Rule of 16? Refresh your memory. First rule that any lieutenant governor has to remember is thou shalt not alienate 16 members of the Senate simultaneously, because they can change the rules. This has happened in other states. When the Senate, if the Senate is skirting dangerously close to becoming a partisanly organized legislature, and the minute that happens, and you've got a Republican lieutenant governor and a Democratic majority, or vice versa, the lieutenant governor of the state of Texas is going to lose all of the powers that the rules of the Senate grant. Remember Humpty?
Sat on the wall.
Humpty Dumpty. And all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. I personally predict that's going to happen sometime in the next 10 years. Humpty's going to get to be an omelet in the next 10 years. Previous lieutenant governors have really skirted with this, but have been very, very careful not to step over the line. Patrick has not stepped over the line, but he's walked up to the line pretty dang closely. And if by chance the Democrats pick up 16 senators in the 2016 election, the 2017 session is going to be real interesting. Lieutenant Governor of Texas will be Humpty on the wall. Powers appoints all the committees. Is there anything about the word all you have trouble with? Good. Refers bills to committees. That's subject to being overruled, of course. Approves the appointment of employees, which is pretty minor. Is really responsible for organizing the calendar, but the House and the Senate do things differently. The House has a calendars committee. Who appoints the calendars committee? The Speaker. Does the Senate have a calendar committee? No. They do this thing through the suspension of the rules process. Recognizes speakers. Now the House and the Senate do things differently. And the procedures by which you get be recognized to speak on the floor of the House are different from those of the Senate. Again, we could go into that in lots of detail, but you're not going to learn it, and you're not going to memorize it, and all you're going to do is say, he's just boring us to death. And then rules on points of order, which can be important on occasion. We've done this. I don't know where that came in again. How has the legislature, what is the most significant change in the legislature since I worked in the legislature in the 1960s?
Better staffing.
That's why we go to a hybrid legislature. That's why we're calling it a hybrid legislature. Back in 1963, Caroline, there's no question it was a citizen legislature from start to finish. Maybe with the exception of the Legislative Budget Board and the Legislative Council. Today, they have as good a quality staff as you'll find in New York, California, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Florida. In fact, I would argue in some places even better. The committee staffs, however, are not divided into majority party, minority party staffs as they are in New York, California, Illinois, and I don't remember Florida, and the United States Congress. And individual members have pretty good staffing now. Where does the governor fit into this? I'm going to use an analogy which you can argue with if you wish. The governor is a little bit like the spare tire on a car. Probably useless most of the time, but can play a pretty major role when you need it. He can declare legislative majorities, legislative emergencies, which really have an impact one way. In the House of Representatives, it puts it at the top of the calendar stack. And that alone can be enough to get it through. He has the right to address the legislature. I've seen governors that really could dominate the agenda of the House or the Senate through their address, and others that they were all doing exactly what you're currently doing when he made his speech. For those of you who weren't paying attention, she was yawning. I didn't figure you were bored, but they were. You know, okay, Governor, get it over with. We're going to go ahead and do our thing regardless of what you ask for. Call special sessions. If it's a pressing problem that needs to be addressed, the legislature will probably do something in a special session. But there are three things that can happen when the governor calls a special session, and two of them are bad. The good thing is they can do what he wants them to do, and he looks good. They can ignore him, and he looks bad. Or they can do something totally different than what he wants, in which case he's got the dilemma of vetoing it or signing it. Neither of which is a good option. If he signs it, he admits that they kicked him down the road. And if he vetoes it, then he's still got to go back and try to get them to do it again, and now they're unhappy. They've bathed the cat. And veto. I discussed with you veto power, right? It's almost absolute for the governor of Texas because of the way the sessions fall. By the end of his 12 years in office, Perry had managed to alienate, or I'll just put a number on it, and you can argue with me if you like, 80 to 90% of the members of both houses by using his veto in ways that no governor had ever used before. Do I need to explain that? If you're going to veto somebody's bill, it's a good idea to talk with them way early in the session. Because if there's something you don't like about it, they can change it and then you don't have to veto it. But if you just surprise them, are you going to be on their BFF list? You're a legislature and you've worked your rear off all session long to get a particular piece of legislation through, and you've got a lot of people who helped you, and the governor does surprise. I'll get you. I'll be honest with you, by the end of his last term in office, Perry had alienated so many members of both the House and the Senate, he could have asked for a resolution to declare December the 25th Christmas, and there would have been dissension. Major steps. You got to draft the bill. You got to get it introduced and referred. You got committee action, floor action, conference committee. All bills do not go to conference. Governor's action and override. We've discussed these in detail. I don't think we're going to go back over them in great detail. We looked at the types of legislative instruments. We know those. What are the main big differences between the House and the Senate in terms of process? Well, the way bills come to the floor, in the House, the calendars committee dominates it. In the Senate, you have this process called, and this, I need to change this, I failed to do it, it's 60%, not two-thirds now, suspension of the rules process. I didn't have time to completely review this in detail, and I apologize to you. It's not two-thirds, it's 60%. I would nail you on that, heavens no. If a bill doesn't get passed in exactly the same form in both houses, it has to go to conference. And I went through the whole conference committee process with you, did I not? Do you want to send a bill to conference if you don't have to? What's your guess? Only 140 days in the session. The clock's going to get you if you don't. Are all the members going to be really busy? Yeah. Can you work out, if it's not something like the budget or a major piece of legislation that's got to pass, or it's such a small, inconsequential piece of legislation that only changing a few words will take care of the problem, you have a pretty good chance of getting it out of conference. But other than that, they just lie there and they die there. Because you've got to get a majority vote of both chambers to pass a conference committee bill. And we talked about the governor's veto. I don't think we need to do that again. The governor has an item veto on appropriations bills only, because the budget contains many, many, many different subjects. Didn't discuss this earlier, but the only bill that the legislature can pass that can deal with more than one topic at a time is the appropriations bill. And if somebody raises a point of order that this bill deals with a secondary piece of information, is that something that the lieutenant governor or speaker is got to rule on? Yeah. This bill violates the constitutional rule that it can only deal with one topic. Now, sometimes we might stretch the definition of what a topic is, but other times it dies. You've been good. I told you I'd let you free a little bit early, and I only lie.